Morning, today's daf in Menachos Samech Gimel. Last daf of the fifth parak of the Masechta. We are starting with the Mishnah on the very top of the Amud, and we are going to reintroduce ourselves again to the various Menachos that are mentioned in the Torah in Parak Beis. There are, as terms of a voluntary mincha offering, a number of them that the Torah describes. If you go back to the beginning, I know at one point in time we went through the Psukim. Just quickly, I'm going to run through the Psukim again. Menefesh ki sakriv karban mincha l'Hashem solos yeh karbano. So the first mincha that's described is a mincha solas. It's a fine flour mincha. V'yatzeka l'Hashem v'nasan l'alavona v'yovio b'nei Aaron ha'kohanim v'kamatz misham alo kumtzo misaltam mishamna al kol l'avona savi k'tira konez v'eskarasa mizbechi yishirech nirchoch l'Hashem. I know I'm flying through the psukim, but the basic idea is that it's going to be handled in the way that we traditionally understand a mincha to be dealt with. And v'anasaras v'nei mincha l'Aaron l'alavona v'kodesh kodashim yishir Hashem. After the kamatz is offered, then the shirayim are eaten by the kohanim. Okay, that's mincha solas. Then Torah goes on to describe v'chisa kriv karban mincha ma'afei sanor. The Torah then describes how the next mincha is going to be that of an oven-baked mincha. Solas chalos matzos bulos bashemen urikike matzos mishuchim bashamen. And the Torah describes that of the oven-baked, there are two types. There is one which is chala, which we'll call just simply a loaf, and the other one is rikikim, which is more like a wafer. Okay. Is this one type, or is this two types, or it could be somewhere in between? Stay tuned. That's going to be a big part of today's discussion in the daf. And then the Torah goes on to describe v'im minchas amachvas karbenechasolas bula b'shemen matzah siyeh pasos usapitim v'yatzak tala shaman minchahi. Torah goes on to describe now our fried menachos. One is where it's done on a machvas. We've consistently throughout the parak described it as a griddle. Well, you stay tuned. That's going to be coming up in today's daf as well. And then finally, Aminchas Marchesh is Karbanecha. The last is a deep dish. It's fried, but it's going to be fried in a deep dish. Aminchas Marchesh is Karbanecha. So it's B'Shem and Te'aseh Ve'eveso is Amincha. And the Torah goes on to describe how this Mincha is offered. So in this Parsha of Menachos, so there is, well, I guess we'll count it as five. Right? Five different types of voluntary offering. The first one is the standard fine flour offering. By the way, it's always wheat, with exception, notable exception, the omer is barley, and the mincha v'sot is barley, but outside of that, the rest of them are wheat. So there is the fine flour, the first one. Then there is the oven bake. The oven bake can come in two forms. One is where it's either made into a loaf, or it's made into thin wafers, and then finally, the two that are fried in a pan, one being in the machvas, and the other one being in the marcheshes. Okay. With that, we start with our Mishnah. Samech Yom Amud Aleph, the Mishnah on the top of the Amud, Ha'omer, Ha'rei Alai B'machavas. So the person makes a voluntary offering of a mincha, and he says that it's going to be upon me. That's the standard language that a person uses when describing a voluntary offering. And he says, I'm going to bring it in a machavas, in a flat pan. So lo yavi b'marcheshes, so then he should not bring it in a deep pan. B'marcheshes lo yavi b'machavas. And if he says the opposite, obviously, then he can't go the other direction. Now, ma be machvas and marcheshes. So, what is the difference between a machvas and marcheshes? So, if I can I clear everyone's thinking right now about what a machvas is and what a marcheshes is? Now, I know I've been saying it pretty consistently throughout the Masechta, but for a moment, though, let's just all clear our minds. Okay, and for me, that's easy. But let's all clear our minds right now, and let's pretend like we don't know. And so, we know that the Torah says that there are two different types, and we know one's a machvas and one's a marcheshes. What's the difference? So, the Mishnah is going to have a debate on this very issue. So, ma be machvas marcheshes, marcheshes yesh la kisui, machvas yin la kisui. Div Rav Yosi Aglili. So, according to Rav Yosi Aglili, the only difference, seemingly, the only difference between a machvas and marcheshes, do we put a lid on top. So, we're going to fry them both, and it's just a question of whether a lid goes on or a lid does not go on. And the marcheshes has a lid, and the machvas does not have a lid. Fine.
What does that do to the stuff?
Yeah, it's an excellent question. I'm not sure. It happens to be Rashi does not comment whatsoever on.
Without a lid, it will be harder, and with a lid, the steam will make it soft.
Good. I'm certainly curious as well. Rashi doesn't comment on Rav Yosi Galili's opinion. The opinion which now we can reinvite ourselves into the Mishnah, because this is the one that we've been saying time and again. Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Amar Marcheshes Amuka. So the standard traditional explanation, I say traditional because it's the one that we're so used to, is that the marcheshes is deep, and therefore maaseh rochshin. That which is inside of it is going to shake. It's going to shimmer. I'll explain that better in just a moment. And the machva safa, it's very shallow. And maaseh kashin, therefore, that which is produced in it is very hard. Crispy. Interesting Rashi's over here. Rashi marchesh es lashon remesh.
These are both fried.
They're both fried. Yes. Yeah, that's right. That's the basic difference. Okay, look at Rashi. Marcheshes, lashon remes, the metargamin and rachshin. So first of all, the word marcheshes. We want movement. Now it's not really that pleasant a thought, but Rashi gives us a little etymology over here. In other words, if you look in the Torah, when the Torah talks about a remesh, remesh are the creeping insects on the ground. Okay, they kind of like move around. And so if you look at targum over there, so you see that the word remesh in targum is rachshin. Anything that kind of moves around, it shakes around, right? You know, your mincha obviously it's like a cake. It's like a spongy cake. But in terms of an imagery over here, like in other words, you press it and it's going to like shake around a little bit. On the other hand, safa, the next Rashi, sheina muka ella shulad safim etzol ugnosel mispazer hashemen ba ugne akli ulahachi kasha. What's going to happen now is that because the oil is going to spread around all over the pan, so basically what's going to happen is going to fry, but it's going to stay hard. Uchmot saf apnei amayim. Rashi gives us the etymology of the word saf, meaning that it spreads out. Good. Starting the Gemara, my time to Rav Yossi. So what's behind the opinion of Rav Yossi? Whether there's a lid or there's no lid. Again, according to Rav Yossi, that's the only difference between the machbas versus the marcheshes. So maybe, says the Gemara, Yilema Marcheshes Dasya Archushe Halev. Maybe someone brings the Marcheshes because of that which is hidden inside. Meaning, the Gemara is viewing the Mincha right now as a voluntary offering by somebody who wants a little bit of a kapara. Now, I use the word kapara over here, we're going to use it loosely. Meaning, as opposed to a carbon chattas is providing a kapara, but it's very detailed, it's very spelled out. You have to violate a certain avera, you have to be in a certain state of mind, it's specific to, you did this carbon is going to provide a kapara. When we're talking about the kapara of, in general, carbonola, and over here by mincha, it's a looser kapara. Meaning, basically, you had a thought, you said something you shouldn't have said, and you want to try to reconnect to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So you bring a mincha. And what the Gemara now is suggesting is, well, maybe the marcheshes, well, that's coming on rechushe halev, that which is hidden in the heart. Meaning, you had a thought you shouldn't have had. And so you want to bring a mincha. And the Pasuk in Tehillim describes how rachash libi. That yeah, in other words, the word marcheshes could be connected to a thought that you had inside. And as far as the machvas is concerned, so that could be coming from the term machbue hapeh, an articulation of speech. He said something you shouldn't have said. You regret it. You want to reconnect to Kadosh Baruch Hu. So you bring a machvas. Ema ibcha, the Gemara says, I'll tell you what. These are nice arguments, but you want to argue? You can argue the other way around. Machvas da'asya mechube halev dechsev lama nechbesi levroch levroach. I could cite a pasuk where the word machvas is connected to something which was hidden inside. When Rachel runs away from when Yaakov and his whole family runs away from Lavan, so Lavan's accusation, Lamanich Besi Levroach. Why are you running in the middle of the night away from me? So in other words, so the word machvas over there describes something which is hidden. And Marcheshes de'asya Archushe k'da Amri Inche have a Marcheshan Sifsosei. And Marcheshe could also be connected to a speech that was uttered. The word Marcheshan Sifsosei, the lips were quivering. So the Gemara says, so whether or not it's covered or not covered, you really can't extract that from the words themselves. So the Gemara says, okay, so Rav Yosef Lili just simply has a tradition that the Marcheshes is covered and the Machvas is not covered. Fine. That was all an attempt to explain Rav Yosef Lili. Now we move on to Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel Omer, Marcheshes Amuga Dechsi V'chol Naaseh B'Marcheshes. So for Rabbi Chanina ben Gamliel, it's actually going to be a little bit easier because now we're going to be looking at the Psukim themselves. Now, I this morning quoted the Psukim from Perek Beis. The Gemara over here are quoting the parallel Psukim that is found in Perek Zion, meaning the Menachos are described twice in the Torah, meaning the voluntary Menachos, once in Vayikra and the second time in Stav. The Pasuk in Stav that's describing the Marcheshes says, Chol Nasa Bi Marcheshes. Key in on the word Bi. It's in the Marcheshes. Machvat Stafa Dichsiv Ve'al Machvas. When the Torah describes the Machvas, it says on the Machvas. So you just see on the basic preposition that's laid out before the word itself, so it's indicative of the idea of whether or not we're going deep into it or it's staying superficially on the surface. Tanu Rabbanan. Interesting debate over here between Beisham and Beisil. Beisham and Omrim. Ha'omer ha'rei alai marcheshes. Let's say a person makes the following voluntary pledge. I would like to take it upon myself to bring a marcheshes to the Beis HaMikdash. He could have meant one of two things. One, he could have meant the mincha, like we've just been describing. Two, he could have meant the keli, the actual utensil itself. And so as he's making this donation to the Beis HaMikdash, it's not clear exactly which one he made reference to. I know, I get this question all the time. Why don't we just ask him? And it's true, by the way. That would be wonderful. I don't know. Maybe he's not here. Maybe he wasn't. For whatever reason, he wasn't available to clarify his pledge. But yes, I also would wonder the same thing myself. Let's just ask him and find out what he's thinking. But anyway, so Yehimuna Chachiavo Eliyahu. So in other words, so because he made a pledge and because we don't know what his real intention was, so therefore, according to Beis Shammai, let's wait. Wait till Eliyahu comes. Now, Misafka...
It took both.
Huh?
So it takes both.
Okay, could be.
No, I'm saying then this way, why wait till Eliyahu? If he does both, for sure, one of them is right.
That's interesting. Okay. Okay.
Nothing wrong bringing...
I hear you. So, Misafka lehu yalshum klinikru alshum ma'asehen. And again, the doubt is whether or not he was talking about the kli, or whether he was talking about what was produced in the kli. Beisila omrim kli ayah b'mikdash marcheshe shma. V'doma kemin kalvos amok. U'kishebatzek munach besocho doma kemin tapuche habartim uchemin blute hayivanim. So Beisila does not have any kind of suffix whatsoever. There was a kli in the Beis HaMikdash. It was actually called the Marcheshes. It was very specific. In fact, it was so specific, the Gemara gives a detailed description of what it looks like. So if you take a look at Rashi over here, Rashi, either Rashi or someone later than Rashi actually drew up a picture of what he imagined it to be. The picture that we're looking at in Rashi obviously is from a bird's eye view. You can see actually even in the Shita Mekubetzes, where there's an attempt to draw a picture of what it looks like. And right?
Yeah, I have that one.
Okay, good. Good. And all right, another picture of what it looks like. Okay, whatever. Point is, it's a really specific type of dish. Or frying utensil, and when you put the dough in, it looks like some sort of apple or pear, or belute hayavanim, again a commonly consumed type of fruit that was popular back then. Anyway, so because it's so specific, Basil says, of course, when he said marcheshes, of course he meant the actual pan itself. V'omer v'chol naaseh b'marcheshes v'amachvas, and the anything that's made in the marcheshes or on the machves, ama al shum hakelim nikru velosh al shum maseim. So when the person says he's going to be offering a marcheshes to the Beis HaMikdash, he's talking about the kli, says Beis Hillel. He's not talking about that which is made inside. Okay.
How often does that happen when you bring a kli as a korban? Most of the people, you know, the language is you can bring a korban or a mincha.
People are open to volunteering and donating various things to the Beis HaMikdash. Sometimes it's money and sometimes it's actual product. And so when an actual utensil is being offered to the Beis HaMikdash, so obviously it has to be miskadesh, it's got to be sanctified and you know, inaugurated. But fine, in other words, the person wants to bring it. And I'm sure the Gizbar, you know, the CFO of the Beis HaMikdash is gonna if there's, you know, a specific need of something that's needed, I'm sure he'll broadcast. Yeah. You know, we could use more of these, you know, and people would bring. Yes. Right. It's right. The loaf nature of the menachos. We're going to describe them later in the Masechta also in greater detail. All right, Harei Alei B'Tanur. Now we are moving on to the oven baked menachos. Interesting that we're not going in the same order as the Psukim. The Psukim, we just went through them in the beginning of Shir today. So first it went through the oven baked, then it went through the fried, the pan fried. Now, the Mishnah is here going the other way, but that's fine. So, Hare Alai B'Tanur. So, the person now says he's going to bring an oven baked. So, Lo Yavi Mafe Kupach. So, what qualifies as an oven? So, a kupach is not an oven. Now, it'd be helpful to all of us here in this room if we know what a kupach was, so we can understand how, according to the Tanna Kamma, it doesn't qualify. Remember the Mishnah and Shabbos in the third parak? So, a lengthy description of three different types of oven-like apparatuses. There was a kira, there was a tanur, and there was a kupach. The tanur, in modern Hebrew, a tanur is an oven. But back in the Mishnah, so when we describe a tanur, so it was the one that really did not have, it had more like of a, the wall slanted inward, so it had the most accumulation of heat inside of it. That was the tanur back then. A kira, a kupach, they were ovens, but they were boxed in shape. And so therefore, you can either lay the pot on the top, or you could put something inside. A very simple apparatus in terms of cooking. The kupach is, according to the Tanna Kamma, not an oven, does not qualify as an oven, vis-a-vis this halacha of mincha. And so therefore, when the mafe tanur is prepared, it cannot be prepared in a kupach. So lo yavi mafe kupach v'lo mafe ra'afim, or mafe yaros ha'ravim. And other cooking instruments that also do not qualify is tiles. They used to heat tiles and bake on top of tiles. Arabian pots. If you ever watch them make the pitas, they stick it onto the side of a pot. Also doesn't qualify. Correct. It's like a dome and they lay it on top. Good. Right. So all these don't qualify. Meaning that's not a tanur, and it has to be baked in a tanur. Rabbi Yehuda Omer Rasta maybe mafe kupach, and Rabbi Yehuda says no, kupach is okay. A kupach in fact qualifies as a tanur, and that would be fine. Hare alai minchas mafe lo yavi mechza chalos mechza rekikim. Rabbi Shimon mati b'fnei shu karben echad. And here we get to a debate that we already alluded to numerous times in this very perek, in terms of when a person says that he's going to bring a mafe tanur, and he's now dedicating himself to bring a mafe tanur. So according to the Tanna Kamma, it's going to be 10 loaves. It's either all going to be chalos or it's all going to be rekikim, but you cannot make a combination of the two. Rabbi Shimon says, no, you can. Rabbi Shimon says, 5 of them can be chalos and 5 of them can be rekikim, that would be fine. And we're going to understand what the machlok is based on in just a moment in the Gemara. We start with the Gemara Tanur Rabbanan mafe tanur v'lo mafe kupach v'lo mafe rafim v'lo mafe yaros haravim. The Brisa over here brings in the opinion of the Tanna Kamma of the Brisa, which is the same as the Tanna Kamma of our Mishnah, and that is it has to be a tanur, with what is understood back then as a tanur, and it cannot be anything that is a cooking instrument, but not a tanur, not even a kupach. In other words, it has to be specifically a tanur. Rav Yehuda Amar tanur, tanur shnei pa'amim la'achshir mafe kupach. Rav Yehuda says that it says tanur twice in the Torah when describing the mafe tanur, and the repetition of the word tanur is there to teach us that either a tanur or a kupach would be acceptable. Rabbi Shimon Omer tanur, tanur shnei pa'amim echad shnei afiyasim b'tanur v'echad shnei ekdeshim b'tanur. According to Rabbi Shimon, the word tanur twice in the Torah being repeated is a function of the fact that one, it's going to be baked in the oven, and two, it's going to be sanctified in the oven. And right now, it sounds like from Rabbi Shimon, the oven is a kli sharvis. But we know that that's not Rabbi Shimon's viewpoint. Umi Israel Rabbi Shimon Haitzvar V'atzanan, the Gemara here quotes the Mishnah we will see later in the Masechta. Rabbi Shimon Amar La'olam Haya Havi Ragol Amar Shteya Lechem V'lechem Apanim K'sheres Bazara U'K'sheres Bebeis Pagi. The lechem upon him and the shtei alechem can be baked basically anywhere. It doesn't have to be baked in the azara. Now let's consider. Rashi over here makes the following point. If the oven were a kli shares, so that means that once it's baked in the oven, it's going to be invested with kedusha sagof. Once invested with kedusha sagof, if taken outside of the azara, it becomes disqualified through the psul of yotzei. Good. So by virtue of the fact that it can be baked anywhere, it doesn't have to be baked on-site, it can be baked off-site, so you see that the oven is not a kli sharis. Now, I presented the Gemara like Rashi. If you want more on this, you can see Tosos, where Tosos gives a different shot, but anyway, good. So fine, so the oven, according to Rabbi Shimon, clearly is not a kli sharis. Amar Rava, Ema Shiyehei Hekdeshan L'shum Tanur. So the way to understand is that, so that it's Hekdesh, will be for the, when you're maktish it, you're maktish it l'shem tanur. Meaning not that the tanur itself will be investing it with kedusha, but understanding that it has to be baked in an oven. But as far as it receiving kedusha as a guf, that'll come later. Okay. Harei alai minchas ma'afel lo yavi mechza v'chulei. Tana Rabbanan. Here the Gemara quotes another braisa, and here we're going to be exploring the machlokas between, that we saw in our Mishnah between the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon, vis-a-vis, how do I construct an oven-baked mincha? Only of chalos, only of rekikin, or can it be a combination of the two? V'chisakriv kishitakriv lasos davar, kishitakriv lasos davar rishos. So what we're going to do in this braisa is go step by step through the psukim, and we are starting, this is Pasuk Dalet, right? Perek Beis Pasuk Dalet. So the Pasuk starts off with the words v'chisakriv. And v'chisakriv means that this is voluntary. Good. Karban mincha, those are the next words of the Pasuk. I'm Rabbi Yehuda, minayin la'omer, harei alai minchas ma'afe, shelo yavi mechze chalos mechze rekikim, tam la'omer karban mincha. Karban echad amartu lecha, v'lo shnayim u'shosha karbanos. So the way Rabbi Yehuda understands the words karban mincha is it has to be of one type. So you cannot make it of a combination of chalos and rekikim. It's either chalos or rekikim. It has to be mincha achas. Amalo Rabbi Shimon. Rabbi Shimon says as we now turn to Samach Yom Amid Beis. V'chi ne'emar. Karban shnei pa'amim. Va'alolo ne'emar ela karban echad. V'ne'emar bo chalos or rekikim. If you read the Pesukim carefully, how many times in the Pesukim does it say the word karban? Well, you know the answer because the Gemara just said it. I'm looking at the Chumash. I'm confirming what of course the Gemara knows is correct. And that is that it says the word carbon, it only says it one time. So now, according to Rabbi Shimon, it's really one carbon, right, which could manifest itself in different ways. So it's carbon, it doesn't say carbon two times. And so therefore, anything after that are just simply options of this carbon. Here's this carbon. So according to Rabbi Shimon, Mafet Tanur is just but one carbon. How do you want to make it? I'll give you options. You can make it chalos, you can make it rekikim, you can make it chalos and rekikim, it would all be okay. And then ubolalan, and then you mix in oil, v'kometz mishnehem, and you do a kemitza from both, v'inkometz v'ala biyado me'achad al shnehem yatza. Now, if the kemitza happens to be only of one of the two, meaning, let's say you did a hybrid of chalos and rekikim, and you did a kemitza, but in your kemitza you only got chalos or you only got rekikim, you should try to get both in your kemitza, so that your kemitza is going to be a representation of the mincha in total. But if you only get chalos or if you only get rekikim, that's fine. B'di'evet, that would be fine. So good. So that's the opinion of Rabbi Shimon. And really now, what we're seeing over here is really what is at the root of the debate between Rabbi Shimon and the Tanakama, which we now learn together is really Rabbi Yehuda, is this mafet tanur mincha. Is it one type of mincha or is it two types of mincha? According to the Tanakam, it's really two different types of menachos. And so therefore, the Torah is telling you, your oven baked, which can come in one of two types, meaning, but it's either or, it's not and. So in other words, it's either going to be a mafet tanur, which is chala, or it's going to be a mafet tanur, which is rekikin. But in other words, but it's two different menachos. Rabbi Shimon is fundamentally disagreeing. He says, no, the mafet tanur mincha is really one, which, and the Torah says, within this one, there's variability, variation, where you could do either chalos or rekikin or both, but it's really one. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, Omer, continuing in the Braisa, there's a third opinion. Minayin la'omer harei alai minchas mafet shelo yavi mechze chalos mechze rekikin, tam la'omer v'chol mincha asher te'afe betanur, v'chol na'aseh b'mercheshes v'amachvas la'kohen ha'makriv oso. Rabbi Yosef, Rabbi Yehuda, which the Gemara is going to point out in just a moment, is just echoing the opinion of Rabbi Yehuda. So what's the difference between him and Rabbi Yehuda? Stay tuned, we're going to ask that question in just a moment. But he learns out that if you look in Parshat Tzav, where the Torah gives a summary of all the various menachos, so it says, here's the oven-baked mincha of challah. And here's the oven-baked of rekikin. And here's the pan-fried of marcheshes. And here's the pan-fried of machvas, etc., etc. Now, when the Torah gives a listing like that, what does it sound like? We know for sure the machvas and marcheshes are not the same mincha. They're different menachos. V'chol ha'am, sorry. And now what his point is going to be is, same thing with oven-baked. By an oven-baked, the rekikin is not the same thing as chal, and chal is not the same thing as rekikin. Ma v'chol hamor lamata shnei minim chalukim, af v'chol hamor lamala shnei minim chalukim. So Rav Yosef, Rav Yehuda now makes what seems to be an excellent argument, and that is that it's if the machvas and marcheshes undeniably is two separate menachos. So the mafet taner of challah and the mafet taner of rikikin are two separate menachos. And so you can't create a oven baked mincha where it's a little bit of rikikin and a little bit of challah. So there's no such animal or mincha. Okay, now, the Gemara over here is just finishing up the perek. Rav Yehuda Shapikama Rabbi Shimon. So now, as far as Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, so Rabbi Shimon is making seemingly a really good point. Now, what was Rabbi Shimon's point? It only says the word carbon once in the pasuk. So it sounds like it's really one mincha, not two different menachas. So the counter argument would be, and again, just going back to the same psukim, perek begs pasuk dalid. So it says the word shemen twice. It says, Chalos matzos belulos ba shemen, urikiki matzos meshuchim ba shaman. Good. So by virtue of the fact that it says ba shemen, it says it twice, that's two different menachos. It says, if it said carbon twice. Rabbi Shimon, what would be his counter-argument? Iloksi ba shemen ba shemen, havamina dafka mechze chalos mechze rikikin. No, Rabbi Shimon says, no, I'll tell you why the Torah had to do that. Because had it not said the word ba shemen twice, here's what I might have thought. There is only one way to prepare the oven-baked mincha, and that is a hybrid of half of them chalos and half of them rikikim. Ava chalos l'chudai, rikikim l'chudayim alone. Kamash malan. So by virtue of the fact that the Torah wants to tell us that there are three different ways to prepare this mincha. One, it could either be all chalos. Two, it could be all rikikim. Or three, it could be half and half. That's why the Torah has to kind of balance it, where on one hand it says carbon once, to tell me that's one carbon, but at the same time saying the word shemen twice to tell me that there are different ways in which one could prepare this mincha. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, Hainu Avua. Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda is agreeing with his father that in terms of the mafetan, or the oven-baked mincha, it can only come from either rikikin or chalos, but you cannot make a cross of the two, a combination of the two. It's just how do we arrive at that conclusion? And so what we have over here is seemingly an agreement and conclusion, but a disagreement of where psukim you get it from, and what's the difference? And the Gemara says, "Hainu avua ikabenau di'i avad." And the Gemara says the difference between the two of them is b'di'evit, meaning. So let's say that I do make, according to Rabbi Yehuda and according to Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, I do make a hybrid, a combination of a mafet taner, which is made up of a composite of five chalos and five rikikin. So, lichatchila should not have done that, according to both of these tanaim. Rabbi Shimon allows it, but these tanaim don't. So lichatchila shouldn't do it. B'dievet, is it okay? And the Gemara says that's the difference between them. So, and which holds like what? So, you know the Gemara. The Gemara says you'll figure it out. So, thankfully, we have Rashi. Rashi writes, "Yigabenal diavad le Rabbi Yehuda dialef time emi carbon echad diavik sheiros." Meaning for Rabbi Yehuda, so he learns it out based on the fact that the Torah says carbon, and it's carbon echad. But so that means that really, the principally, how should it look versus b'diavad, it would be okay if it was a hybrid. However, according to Rabbi Yossi, dialef mi belula v'chareva ki hechad de belula dihi mincha nedav v'chareva dihi mincha tzchote. Afil diavad im ervam psulos ki damar lo yosim ala shemen. The im sam pasul hachinami chalos rikikin diavad law. Look, because Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda's source comes from the fact that the Torah and Parshat Tzav list together the mafetanor of rikikin, the mafetanor of chalos, the marcheshes, the machvas, the oil menachos, the non-oil menachos. And as Rashi over here explains, you can't mix oil and non-oil together. Oil menachos are voluntary. Non-oil menachos are obligatory. There is no way that the two can cross. If a little bit of oil gets into a non-oil mincha, so then it is disqualified. So that means to say that for Rabbi Yossi, Rabbi Yehuda, in his source, which is in Parshat Tzav, so b'di'evit, it would simply be no good. You make a mafetan or mincha, and it's a combination of the two, I feel b'di'evit, it wouldn't be good. Hajalach kol menachos, that's the end of the fifth parak of the Masechta. We now begin the sixth parak of the Masechta, a couple of introductory points. First of all, a little bit of a mea culpa. I told you that we're going to do the Omer parak is going to be the seventh parak of the Masechta, so I was wrong. So it's the sixth parak. Okay, good. That's point number one. Point number two is that in the Mishnayos, it gets a little bit more confusing. I already confused you once, but it gets a little bit more confusing. If you open up Mishnayos, meaning just Mishnayos, so you will see that this is not the sixth parak, but this is rather the tenth parak. For whatever reason, it happened a couple times in Shas, right? The third and fourth parak of Megillah. Over here, the sixth and tenth parak, for whatever reason, when it was converted from Mishnayos to Gemara, so they took the tenth parak and they put it in the sixth parak and they swapped them out. And why? I'm sure there's a reason why it happened. Doesn't matter. In other words, we're learning the Gemara, so we're obviously going to learn this now as the sixth parak of the Masechta. What are we talking about? We're talking about the Karban Omer. Okay, so it's an exciting parak, as there's a lot of basic ideas to follow in terms of the Omer, the Karban Omer. It's serving as the matir. Let's get just a basic introduction. The Torah tells us in Parshas Emor about this special day. It is the second day of Pesach. Now, to us, the second day of Pesach, so here in Galus, so it's Yom Tov Sheni Shel Pesach. Good. In Eretz Yisrael, it's the first day of Chol HaMoed. Also good. In terms of its significance after that, the first day we start counting the Omer. When there was the Beis HaMikdash, it was much more exciting than just that. In the Beis HaMikdash, so a carbon was offered on that very day, known as the Karban Omer. And it was a mincha. It's the most unusual mincha because, first of all, it comes from barley. It does not come from wheat. And that is almost unprecedented. There's one other time where barley is offered, and that's the mincha v'soto. In Parshas Emor, again, this is just still part of the introduction. So, Vayidaber Hashem al Moshe l'Emor, Perichav Gimel, we just leaned it a couple times over Sukkos. This is now Pasuk Yud. So you're going to do a harvest. And you're going to bring an omer. An omer is the name of the actual carbon itself. It's the mincha. It's going to be the first of your harvesting. And there will be a tenufa, a waving. We just got finished talking about that. And when is it going to be waved? The day after Shabbos. Whoopa. That is going to be the point of a lot of discussion that's taking place here in this parak, where the Torah says that it's going to be done the day after Shabbos. Okay, we have a Misara, thankfully. We have a tradition. And our tradition tells us that the Torah Shabbat Peh tells us that the day after Shabbos means the day after the first day of Pesach. Okay, not right. Shabbos over here does not mean Shabbos. Okay, good. Stay tuned, because if you reject the tradition, so you can give a different understanding of the Pasuk. Well, that's coming up in just a little bit. The Asisam Yama Nifchemes Omer Keves Tamim Ben Shnasola Ola LaHashem. Now, on the day that you bring the Omer, you're also going to bring an animal as well as a carbon. Umin Chasos Shnei Asunim Sos Bula B'Shem and Isha LaHashem Reach Nichoch Menisko Yan Revi Asayin. Together with the Nesachim. V'lechem V'kali V'charmel Lo Sochlu Ad Etzem Hayom Hazeh. No grains can be eaten. It doesn't matter how the grains are prepared, whether they're roasted, whether they're baked, whether they're whatever. We'll go over the various permutations of how to prepare the grains. It doesn't matter. You can't eat them at etzem hayom hazeh until this very day. Ad haviyachem es karban alokeichem chukas olam l'dorasechem b'chol moshvasechem. So until the carbon omer is brought, or until we get to the day, and if you heard a little bit, it's a little bit confusing. Which is serving as a matir? The day is serving as a matir, or the carbon is serving as a matir? We'll get to that later in the parak, But until that point in time, you can't eat any of the grains until that moment in time. And that, of course, is the Isser of Chadash. And we're going to come back to that also later. And then, I'm not reading any more in the Chumash, but from there, Usfartim Lechem Imachras HaShabbos. And then you start counting also from that day. You count 50 days, and you know the rest. We start with our Mishnah. So this is now the first Mishnah, the opening Mishnah of the sixth parak of the Masechta. And here we're going to be focusing on the sifting of the barley to get from the amount of barley that we're starting off with to what we need. Okay, how much barley do we need? So we need one isaron of barley. But that is going to be a fine sifted flour. So how much barley do we need to start off with? Meaning the actual grain themselves, the barley grain themselves, in order to get to one isaron. So I'm going to say it simply, although the numbers are going to change a little bit over the course of this Mishnah, you're going to need 10 times that amount. Now, 10 times of a tenth of, right, the Isaron is one-tenth. So 10 times that is going to be, obviously, a full amount. Got it? That full amount can be expressed in one of a number of different ways. We can call it an Eifa, or we can call it three Sa'a. Doesn't matter. In other words, it's the same thing. So an Eifa or three Sa'ah, and now what we're going to do is we're going to start with that much barley, and we're going to sift, and we're going to grind it. And then we're going to sift it, and we're going to continue sifting it, and from there we're going to get to an Isarin, a tenth of an Eifa. Good. And that is going to be the starting process, and obviously from there we're going to move on from there. But our Mishnah right now is going to be focusing on the harvesting and the sifting. That's where we're starting in our Mishnah. Rabbi Shmuel Omer Haya, Ba B'Shabbos. Now, you know the Omer can come on Shabbos. Now, of course it can come on Shabbos, because the Pesach can be on a Friday. And when I say Pesach, by the way, sorry, let me be clear. Right. That lends itself to ambiguity. Because Pesach could be talking about the 14th, it could be talking about the 15th, and okay, let's be clear. The 15th day of Nisan can come out on a Friday, which means that the 16th day would be on a Shabbos. But this mincha is a public mincha. It's a calendaric mincha. It overrides the Shabbos. So we're going to be offering it on the Shabbos. The preparation of this mincha is also going to be done on the Shabbos. Why can't the preparation be done before Shabbos? Stay tuned. We'll talk about that later. But it can't. It has to be prepared on Shabbos. So over here in this mishnah, what we're talking about is when the 16th falls out on Shabbos and when it falls out any other day of the week, it could happen in either occurrence. And is there going to be any difference whether it falls out on Shabbos or whether it falls out during the week? That's going to be the discussion of the Mishnah. Just as a parenthetical note, I'll say it quickly. You're right. You know, everyone here knows that. I like the calendar a little bit. I'm not an expert on the calendar, you know, but I like it. We have a general rule regarding the month of Nisan, Lo Badu Nisan. That Nisan, Rosh Chodesh Nisan, cannot fall out on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. Right? The one that's more popular is Lo Adu Rosh. That Rosh Chodesh Tishrei cannot fall out on a Sunday, Wednesday, Friday. Why that is, not for now. But in other words, so Rosh Chodesh Nisan cannot fall out on a Monday, Wednesday, or Friday. So that means that in our fixed calendar, so this would never happen. Never happen. Because if Rosh Chodesh Nisan is not falling out on a Friday, so that means that the 15th day of Nisan is not coming out on a Friday. So for us, the 16th day is not coming out on a Shabbos. Okay, good. But that's with our fixed calendars. Obviously, before the calendars were fixed, so there was there was an allowance for this to occur. Okay, anyway, with that was all just a parenthetical note. Rabbi Shmuel Omer. Omer Hayaba B'Shabbos. So when the Omer was brought on Shabbos, Mishalosh Sa'in. So you start off with three Sa'ah. That's the full Eifa. Uvechol Mechamesh. But if you're doing it during the week, so then you're going to start off with five Sa'ah, which is a lot more. Right, almost two times more. Why? Please wait. We'll discuss why when we get to the Gemara. And according to the Chachamim, no, you always start off with three sa'ah. So in other words, you start off with three sa'ah of barley, and you're going to be grinding and sifting to the point where you get to one isara. And that's always going to be the case. And it doesn't matter if we're doing this on a Shabbos or if we're doing this on a Tuesday. Rabbi Chanina is going to go on and Omer b'Shabbos ayinikza b'yachidu uvemagal echad. Now, Rabbi Chanin is going to call on him also is of the opinion that there's going to be a difference whether the Omer was being brought on a Shabbos versus a Tuesday. If it was being brought on a Shabbos, so the harvesting would be done by one person with one sickle and with one cart. During the week, Bishlosha, it would be done with three people with three carts and with three sickles. V'chachamim Omrim, Echad Shabbos ve'echachol b'shlosha, b'shlosh kupas, b'shlosh magalos. And according to the Chachamim, on Shabbos, whether it was Shabbos or whether it was a weekday, so we would always use three people. Okay. And so here now, let's introduce. Why three people? Right? Why three carts? Why three sickles? What's so exciting about the number three? Okay. So Rashi explains very succinctly over here at the end of the Mishnah. I'm going to elaborate a little bit. Rashi says, "Begimah Magalos lefarsem hadavar mipnei habaitusim." We want publicity over here because of those baitusim. So a little bit of background. Well, already some of it you know already because we went through the psukim inside. The Torah itself gives off a little bit of ambiguity in terms of when the Omer is brought, because the Torah says mimacharas haShabbos. Good. Without a Torah Shabbat Peh, so you could say that that means the day after Shabbos. But we have a Torah Shabbat Peh, and our tradition tells us. Talach l'moshe mi-Sinai, however you want to describe it, right? But in other words, I say however you want to describe it. We could call it halach l'moshe mi-Sinai, we could call it, what's it called, perushim ha-mukubalim. I mean, the point is that we have a tradition going back to Sinai that in this pasuk, Mimach Rosh HaShabbos means the day after Pesach. And again, to cut out the ambiguity, the day after the 15th of Nisan. Good. Right? The first day of Yontif, the day after Yontif. The Torah describes that day as Shabbos. I know it's not Shabbos, it's Yontif. But our tradition tells us, why does the Torah refer to that day as Shabbos? Good. That's a wonderful question. It's not for us to discuss right now. Right, the look at the Purushim on Chumash for various suggestions, but that's what we know. Good. In the Second Temple period, along come a number of sectarian groups. The earliest of the sectarian groups were known as the Baitusim. You take a look at the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos on Tiknat Shochot. It's the third Mishnah of the first parak of Pirkei Avos. So you'll see over there where he tells everyone don't serve a Kadosh Baruch Hu as if you're receiving reward, but the way, the proper attitude that one should have when serving a Kadosh Baruch Hu is as if you're not receiving a reward. Do it separate from any kind of schar that you're going to receive. Good. And unfortunately, he had a number of students who, when the Rebbe said that, and obviously he must have said it repeatedly because they made it into Pirkei Avos, so they understood it to mean that there's no reward. And so they went a little bit off the beaten path, and they started a sectarian group, otherwise known as the Baitusim. The name of the Talmud was Baitus. And so they went off the path. And in going off the path, one of the things they did is a rejection of Torah Shabbat Peh. And so they rejected Torah Shabbat Peh. Now, I call them a sectarian group. At certain points during the Second Temple, they had significant power in the Beis HaMikdash. And so if they could control the Beis HaMikdash and religious life during the Second Temple, so they would have it that the Omer would be brought Sunday, regardless of when Pesach came out, and regardless of what day was the first day of Yontif. And so therefore, what we had to do is that we had to fight these Baitusim, and a lot of what was done was to publicize the matter in order to show them that, no, it's not Sunday, meaning it could be Sunday, meaning, you're right, the 15th day of Nisan can fall on a Shabbos. It could be Sunday, but that's not what the Torah means. We have a tradition. Don't forsake our tradition. And so this is the kind of history that occurred, where now, as a result of that, so for the harvesting, I know it sounds funny, but three people had to go and harvest. You didn't need one. You didn't need three people. Good. With three sickles, right? It looks a little bit strange. What's going on out there? What's going on out there? There is Pearsum in order to defend our Masorah. Good. Let's start with the Gemara. Bishlama. Rabbanan Kasar V'Yisar Mufcha Bishlosh Asayin Asiv Loshna B'Chov Loshna B'Shabbos. Now let's go back to the first debate that occurred in the Mishnah. Well, how much barley do you start off with? So according to the Chacham, you start off with three Sa'ah, very simple. And you grind and you sift, and from there you're going to get one Isaron. And that's consistent. Doesn't matter if it's Shabbos, doesn't matter if it's the week. But Rabbi Shmuel, what is going on with Rabbi Shmuel's opinion? I don't understand it. Ela Rabbi Shmuel, my kasavi kasavi sarin mufcha lo asi ala mechamesh, afil b'shabes nami. And he b'shalosh asi afil b'chol nami. Well, how do you arrive at one isaron of fine sifted barley? If he normally says that you have to start off with five in order to get to five sa'ah, to get to one isaron, so then it should always be five sa'ah. And if he's of the opinion that you need to start off with three saw, so there should always be three saw. Well, why does it make a difference whether it's Shabbos during the week? It doesn't make any sense. Amar Rav, so the Gemara gives the explanation. I only call it the explanation because it's the only one the Gemara is going to provide. Kasav Rabbi Shmuel Yisarn Mufchar Belo Tircha Asi Mechamesh. B'Tircha Asi Mishalosh. So here's the story. Story is that if you start off with five saw, so you can get to one Yisaron, and it won't require that much effort, because you don't have to sift and re-sift and re-sift. In other words, just with a couple of siftings, you'll get from five sa, which is a lot of barley to begin with, down to one isaron of fine sifted flour. However, if you're starting off with three sa, so if you keep re-sifting, eventually you're going to get to one isaron. It'll just take a lot more work. And now, here's why there's going to be a difference. B'chol ma'isina mechamesh da'achi shvicha milsa. So during the week, so get five, because five is better. Meaning it's going to be easier to get from five sa'ah down to one isaron, it's just easier. But on Shabbos, obviously, we have Chil Shabbos to be concerned with. Now, I say Chil Shabbos. The Torah allows us to do this. But on the other hand, if we could do it with less Chil Shabbos, So let's try to do it with less chil Shabbos. So b'Shabbos mutav shiyarbe b'malacha achas barakada v'al yarbe b'malachos harbe. And a really interesting position of Rabbi Shmuel, which is, you know what's better on Shabbos? Meaning, if I start off with three on Shabbos, so you're right, I'm going to be sifting a lot. But that's only violating one malacha. You see, if we start off with five sa'a of barley, so now with those five sa'a of barley, I'm going to have to do more harvesting. I'm going through Rashi over here. I'm just saying in English. More harvesting, more winnowing, more selection, more grinding, and more sifting. Right? But in other words, but I'm going to be doing more malachos on Shabbos. Better, says Rabbi Yishmael, if we can cut down on the number of malachos that are violated, even though that means that for one malacha, we're going to be doing that one malacha in excess. That's his balance sheet in terms of what would be better on Shabbos. And that's why, according to Rabbi Shmuel, on Shabbos, three is better than five. Because you'll be doing more sifting, but less of the other malachos. Adkan. Okay, we'll stop over here. Tomorrow we pick it up with Amar Rabbah on the bottom of the Amud.